You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Hello, welcome please to Telstra Customer Service. How may I be helping you?
Conform or be consumed.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history.
I heard a rumour today.
I like your rumours.
I know, as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
What is your environmental policy?
To sell Telstra.
You heard of road rage?
Yes.
What about web rage?
And within a few minutes.
Minutes?
Yeah, minutes. It's not minutes. XG, mate.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. 2007 is an election year here in Australia, with a federal poll scheduled towards late October or early November. Both major parties seem to have a difference in opinion when it comes to telecommunications and connectivity in Australia. According to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, we currently have 20,757,869 people living in this country, of which 6.65 million are connected to the internet in one form or another. That's just 32.1% of the total population. In a report released last Friday, February the 16th, by the ABS, wireless broadband technology seems to be the big winner, with a 400% growth in just 18 months. So how does broadband and wireless compare? And what of the new wireless fad? Is Telstra's Next G and companies like Unwired set to reap the spoils of their labour? Stay tuned to hear what the panel thinks later on today's show.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra's first half earnings for 2007 are announced, and a 14.4 meg upgrade too for Next G. False advertising is rife in the broadband marketplace. A leading Australian retailer refuses to stock HD DVD. The ACCC steps up to mediate between Telstra and Optus. Apple's $2 million development for Melbourne. And Australia's obsession with mobile technology. All that and more on Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. But before all that, let's find out what's been making news in the IT world this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Telstra announces upgrades to its 3G network, plasma prices come tumbling down, Nokia announces a deal with YouTube, Google loses copyright case, and Intel makes a new semiconductor breakthrough. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra's Chief Executive Officer, Sol Trujillo, threw the switch this week on a major technology upgrade to Telstra's Next G mobile network at the company's half-year profit briefing in Melbourne. Telstra has installed the latest speed improvement to its network, raising theoretical data speeds from 3.6 megabits per second to 14.4 megabits per second in a move that pushes the country's biggest mobile player ahead of its competitors in network speed and capacity. Mr. Trujillo said, with the new distance upgrades, even some of the most remote customers in outback Australia will be able to see the benefits.
As you think about Australia and as you think about what we're doing with Next G, it really is about changing the game. It's about changing the experience and it's about growing our business, but doing it in a value-add way.
Unfortunately for Telstra, there are no handsets currently available to support the faster speeds, and most customers will need to buy new handsets to see any benefits. The telecoms giant, which has 45% of Australia's 20 million mobile users, has also fitted out about 40 base stations situated in elevated positions in rural areas, with new technology that will boost the distance a signal can travel from 50 kilometres to 200 kilometres. Telstra's announcement comes after Optus this month said it would spend up to $800 million this year extending its city-based 3G network to 96% of Australians. A leading television research company announced this week that plasma technology is still alive and well, and that the market is growing while prices continue to fall. According to Oregon-based Quixel Research, a market intelligence firm focused on home theatre and home entertainment systems, the average selling price of a plasma TV is declining fast. During the last quarter of 2006, Quixel claims the average price of a 42-inch high-def television has declined 30% from the third quarter. However, sales are still growing. This month in Australia, Pioneer slashed the price of its flagship 50-inch 1080p plasma by $5,000, now down to just over $10,000. Nokia has announced a deal with YouTube that brings the website's video content to N-Series multimedia handsets. YouTube's videos are now accessible through the N-Series web browser through the soon-to-be-launched YouTube mobile website. Additionally, Nokia's new video sensor application allows YouTube RSS feeds to be received on a mobile device. The announcement was just one of many made by Nokia at the 3GSM World Congress in Barcelona. Nokia also unveiled three new handsets in its E-series designed for business professionals, as well as the 6110 Navigator, a navigation-enabled phone that combines GPS functionality with always-on mobile connectivity. Other new handsets include the N77 multimedia computer designed for mobile television. All these products will be available in Australia later this year. A Belgian court has ruled that Google cannot reproduce extracts from Belgian newspapers. The case was brought against Google by Kopie Press, which manages copyrights for Belgium's French and German language newspapers. Kopie Press has also demanded that the French division of internet portal Yahoo stop displaying Belgian press reports. Kopie Press argues that versions of news articles stored on Google can be seen on its service even after the articles are no longer freely accessible on the newspaper's website. Google has faced a similar complaint in the United States from AFP, the French news agency, which filed a suit in 2005. And for those interested in the development of semiconductors and microprocessors, Intel, the world's biggest chipmaker, said last week that it had designed a computer chip that promised to perform calculations as quickly as an entire data center, while consuming only as much energy as a light bulb. Intel has developed the processor that can perform about 1 trillion calculations per second, or deliver a performance of 1.01 teraflops. By comparison, a supercomputer developed at Sandia National Labs in 1996, just as powerful as Intel's new processor, took up more than 600 square meters, used nearly 10,000 Pentium Pro processors, and consumed more than 500 kilowatts of electricity. Intel's latest chip is still in the research phase, but it marks an important breakthrough for an industry driven with obtaining the highest amount of performance for the lowest energy consumption. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
New Yorkers who blithely cross the street listening to an iPod or talking on their mobile phone could soon face a $100 fine.
And there's rumours abounding that the new Mac operating system 10, codenamed Leopard, will be released either on March the 28th or perhaps as early as February 20th.
He's trying to get that last remaining 10% of audio unprotected.
In 1995, an American was murdered in Nigeria while pursuing a 419 scam, and other foreigners have been reported as missing.
One way is to, instead of using a word, use a whole phrase and then just pick the first letter of each word in the phrase.
Google have been keeping a record of every search that you do. So they associate your search history with your Google login for whether it's Gmail, Calendar, whatever it is.
Do you get little warnings on stickers, JD, when you buy your, your iPod? They'll be next, won't it?
iPod might be dangerous.
It's a bit like on the cigarette packets. They'll have people implanted on hoods of bonnets.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step 1. Download and install some podcatching software, like iTunes. Step 2. Find the address of the Tech Talk Radio podcast feed on the Tech Talk Radio website. Step 3. Copy and paste the feed address into your podcatching software. And you're done. Now every week you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
visiting the relatives, washing the car.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very good evening. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio for this week. I'm Andrew McComb. In the panel tonight is Graeme Callaghan and Mark Diggins, and we have a letter from Dr. Ron's mum saying that he wasn't feeling well tonight, so he won't be here. But boys, it's nice. A bit of room to move in the studio tonight, isn't there? A bit of elbow space and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
back to sitting in Dr. Ron's chair. That's nice.
It is. Yeah. It is. He's left us a few things to listen to tonight, which is very nice of him before he went off. But nonetheless, he has an apology. And we have an apology too. We've already had an email in tonight from Jeff Dudley saying, where's the Shoutcast stream? Well, Dr. Ron's Oops. Responsible for the Shoutcast stream. And he's just shirked his whole responsibilities and done a runner. So please just email Dr. Ron at techtalkradio.com.au with your complaints, and I'm sure he won't answer you.
Or better still, just listen to the Windows stream.
Well, yeah, that's right. The Windows stream's going. But if you, yeah, I'm sure people have probably figured that out by now. We're powered by NextG tonight too, which is just lovely. We're sitting here. We have the laptop on the screen, and it's plugged into the mobile as opposed to into broadband, and giving a bit of NextG run for its money, because tonight is going to be a little bit of a telephony night. We're going to talk all about what happened last week and what's happening in the wonderful world of mobile communications, especially as we become progressive and move into the world of very high-speed broadband on our mobile devices. Is it all what it's cracked up to be? Well, Mark's going to be copying a few questions tonight because he knows a bit more about it than everybody else. So stay tuned to all of that. Also tonight, we're going to be talking about the internet survey that came out. Have you guys privy to this yet? It came out last Friday from the Australian Bureau.
Oh, haven't read it as yet.
Of statistics about what Australian internet people are doing, what our habits are like.
This is the ABS one, yeah.
Yeah, 32.1% of Australians, of the total population, are currently online, which isn't bad, really, when you think about it. Because we've got a lot of space in this country. And
yeah, that's pretty good. I think they've had one of these surveys before, haven't they? This is more like an update.
I think so.
It was a while ago, though. I can't exactly remember what was in it. But, yeah, it's always good information. I'd like to hear it.
It's a bit of an eye-opener, too. I think the wireless side of things, not unlike what we're talking tonight, wireless internet connectivity, whether it be through NextG or companies like Wired or Unwired, whoever they might be today, they actually providing a fair bit of this sort of technology for consumers. In the city centres only, really, but now that Telstra's pushing out NextG, we'll see what happens out there in the rural side of things. You reckon? I think Seoul came out and had a bit of a chat during the week because Telstra had their first half earnings profit release.
Yep, they had their investor day.
Which I thought was very interesting. He came out with some very interesting statistics as well as answered some tricky questions from some of the media and press gallery. We'll talk a little bit about that later on as well, too. In the meanwhile, couple of interesting things. A warning to people listening to Tech Talk Radio. I had a bit of an accident during the week, and I thought I'd share this with everybody.
Andrew, what happened?
Have you printer cartridges? Do you change your own inks?
Yes,
As in refill them.
I personally don't. You do?
I do the black cartridge. I won't go near the colour one, but I always do the black one.
It's expensive business ink, isn't it? It's no wonder people do refill them.
We go through it at the office, like, there's no tomorrow. It just keeps on churning, especially with doing presentations, because everyone expects a colour brochure
these days.
You want
to see me later about buying a colour laser printer? It's going to be a lot cheaper for you.
Okay, I will do that. Having said what I've just said, for those of you who are familiar with these toner cartridges, you actually get a little syringe, which you draw the ink out of the big bottle that you buy from your favourite supplier, and you then inject it into the top of the cartridge, a little device.
Hmm.
Anyway, I've made the fatal mistake of actually allowing somebody else to connect the needle to the bulk part of the syringe where the body of the fluid stays in.
Uh-oh. And where did you do all this?
I tell my kids, don't come anywhere near me when you do this sort of stuff. But when I'm in the office...
You weren't wearing your good suit, were you?
No, fortunately not. And it was the magenta colour, too.
Oh.
Now, let me just say, when I pushed down to push the ink into the cartridge... If anyone had walked in from the police force, they would have arrested me on the site for a murder scene. It was dark blood red syrup that went absolutely everywhere, all over a really nice monitor and half a dozen keyboards, half a dozen sheets of paper.
No.
And the nice white bench and all that sort of stuff. And that was the end of my day. That was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Not to mention all over, me.
So how did you go cleaning it up? Is it clean upable?
It's not bad, actually. I think the key to it is getting the clothes into the washing machine pretty quick, smart. But unfortunately, I was probably 30 kilometres from the nearest washing machine that I had available to me, so that didn't work. So I did actually lose a shirt, but the shorts managed to recover. But fortunately, because I'm a messy sort of person in at the office, I had a lot of paper on the table.
Right.
Saved you on this occasion.
And in this occasion, it wasn't too bad. Now, if you get printer ink on your monitors, on glass and things like that, it just wipes off.
Yep.
It's when it gets in and underneath the keyboard and on things like carpet. And we've got floorboards in the office too, where we're modern, trendy sort of people. So it wasn't too bad. It was just a painful thing. And of course, everybody else out in the office They did. They came in and said, "Oh, is this a bad time?" and walked straight back out again.
Yeah, absolutely. I would have done the same thing.
So there's the moral of the story when it comes to ink cartridges. So that was my bad experience for the week.
Yes, I learned early on, do it in the laundry trough.
Yeah, well, that's why I do it at home, but I don't have one at the office. Mm-hmm. I could do it in the where the kitchenette is, but I think, yeah, it would have been... Well, it would have been better than on the floor in the office anyway. Well, yes. Another interesting thing too, we podcast. For those people who aren't aware, who may be listening to us on a radio station, you may also be only getting the 1 hour version of Tech Talk Radio on the radio station that you're listening to. You can come to our website and you can get the full 2 hour glorious version of the podcast, if you like, with all the bits that get edited out to fit 1 hour, put back in for your listening pleasure. You can do that by visiting techtalkradio.com.au and follow your nose. Pretty straightforward.
And you can also get your choice of having the version with music or a version without the music.
Yes, if you're that way inclined, you want to hear what we get up to in the breaks. There is some music tracks when we go and get a coffee and do things like that. So, yes, as Graham said, you can have all that. Now, another interesting thing that came, we're sitting here looking at the laptop before, and there's some interesting emails doing the rounds at the moment. John Howard survived a heart attack.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. This has just seems to have been a new strategy from the spammers.
Just this afternoon, I've got about three of them. Well, there's two sitting here on the laptop, one from, who is it? Elaine, and one from Darcy or something like that, I can see on the screen.
Yep, and they're putting in a headline that's likely to make you want to click on it. Oh, I didn't know that.
Exactly. It's a bit of a bait. I mean, we were trying to work out why.
And they're pretending to link to a prominent newspaper website.
Yes. Let me open one of these
and
up.
There's another one there from Christine. The life of the Prime Minister is in grave danger.
Oh, there is too. I didn't notice that one. There's plenty here on the inbox down here. Yeah, but it goes on. Apparently, Sydney the 18th, they're alleging that something untoward happened to Mr. Howard. And then they put a link there to a credible Australian newspaper. Now, it takes you to a site. Now, Graham, what did you do? You went to this site. Did you notice anything?
On my test system, so that I wasn't exposing any real data to these guys, I clicked on the link and watched exactly what happened. And it went to a website that loaded up a frame that filled the entire screen. That loaded up a different website that loaded up another frame that filled that entire screen, which loaded up what appeared to be the genuine Australian newspaper website.
So you went through a few websites to get to the destination.
It put it into... It effectively was the newspaper site inside two invisible containers.
So what do you think behind that Australian newspaper, that first frame it loaded, there's something
I reckon the first frame's just to have multiple front ends so you can direct people to the same thing through multiple addresses. Mm-hmm. The second one was always the same for all the links I tested, and I reckon that's the one that either... it was supposed to, or will at some point in the future, contain some dangerous payload.
Okay.
And then the last frame that contains the either an exact copy or even just redirecting to the actual newspaper website is probably just to trick you to make you stop there and read it
long enough for it to download
as
JavaScript.
What was on the website of the newspaper? Was there anything
actually
related? Did they make it up?
It came up with the genuine banners, complete with genuine ads, you know, the flash animated ads that they came up with. There was an ad for a prominent car manufacturer, and there was an ad for a prominent telecommunications company that I shan't name.
Not a former monopoly by any chance.
Well, it might have been a former monopoly. It all looked very genuine and real. And in fact, it appeared to be downloading stuff from the genuine site. Where the story should have been, it actually came up with an error message. So it may be that the newspaper site was taking steps to fight back.
So you reckon these guys were testing, do you?
I think there's something bigger coming down the track. A possibility, yeah. I think this is either collecting numbers, so seeing how often people click on it, or they were testing, or whatever they tried to do.
Well, actually didn't click the link. I just read the newspaper and looked at the typos in the body of the text, which is normally a bit of a telltale sign when it comes to spam.
Yes.
I also sent the several copies that were emailed to me to the ACMA so that they could have a bit of a look and see what was going on.
I've got a little suspicion that the ACMA are going to be all over this one.
Yeah. I think you could be right. So just goes to show, just be wary of where you click to those sites, because if you're using an older browser, chances are you may not have the appropriate protection for something which someone's trying to load onto your machine. Right. What browser were you using, Graham?
Well, I was using Firefox, but I was also using a text mode web browser on one of my Linux servers. I was looking at it in a couple of different ways and being very careful.
So the moral of the story is, if in doubt, read first and do not click anything unless you are 100% sure that it's good. And you can normally tell, let's say, by the typos. These people can't type normally. It's like those banking fraudulent things, the text and tense.
The grammar was terrible, even where the spelling was correct. And another giveaway is that the link claimed to go to one site. So it had the correct address of this newspaper in the visible text. But when you hovered your mouse over it and you look in the status line at the bottom, where it actually took you was somewhere completely different. So that's another dead giveaway.
Interesting subject headings too. That you see the first one says Prime Minister's life in grave danger or words to that effect. And later on it says John Howard survived a heart attack. But it doesn't actually ever put Prime Minister and John Howard in the same subject title. I wonder if they're trying to get away with something by doing that. So when they get caught for spam, they no, we didn't do that. You know? different John Howard survived a heart attack.
Yeah, yeah. But despite the fact he lives in Canberra and Kirribilli and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Complete coincidence. JB Hi-Fi is a retail organisation here in Melbourne,
yep.
Which has national shops all around the countryside as well. They've made a very interesting and bold statement, I thought, in the mainstream media that they're only going to be stocking Blu-ray.
This is a very curious stance for them to be taking.
It is, and I'm just wondering why. But speaking to the official launch of Blu-ray in Australia by the Australian Blu-ray Disc Working Group, and I didn't know there was one, JB Hi-Fi marketing manager Scott Browning said the Blu-ray technology and discs would be the only high-definition format the chain would support, apart from selling drive units for the Xbox 360 console, which will support the rival HD DVD format. Now, who's paying who off here? Sure. Come on, conspiracy theorists.
Yes.
Yeah. There's got to be something in it for them to do that.
That's a big call, I would have thought.
It really is.
That's like VHS and Beta. Oh, we're not going to stock Beta.
But it's also something that, as far as I know, JB are not known for doing. They're not
very
aligned
out of character,
isn't it? To any brand. You can normally go in there and see every brand there is of every device.
And haven't some manufacturers of film, some of the movie greats then only gone with one technology? So by JB you won't be able to get movies from, I don't know, Fox, for example.
But there's only about 11 titles out, I think, on HD DVD. I don't know how many there are on Blu-ray. Okay. I could be wrong. Someone will tell me. We've got feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. If you're listening to us live, or even if you're not, we love getting emails from our listeners. And you can contribute as we speak. Hello, Jeff Dudley, who's just doing that as we speak as well. very interesting move on behalf of JB Hi-Fi. Another interesting thing, the ACCC have been sort of becoming the big brother between Telstra and Optus at the moment with what they call the interconnection or termination fee that the mobile carriers charge to use each other's network. Now, I'm assuming that if one person on one carrier rings someone on the other carrier, they get pinged a rental for use of the circuit. And there's been all sorts of interesting fees that have been bandied around the place. And they're looking at around about 21 cents per minute to use everyone else's network and things like that, which I thought was quite high. But the ACCC have stepped in to regulate this because there was obviously a bit of a discrepancy between the carriers.
Yes.
Funny that it comes to that, isn't it?
And, well,
this is not a lot different, is it, to those the banking where you use someone else's ATM and then your bank gets charged for it and then they pass those fees on to you?
It's exactly right, I think.
You'd think it would be the same, but some of these phone companies, again, not naming any in particular, have been known to charge higher rates on their retail, on their wholesale services than they do for their retail. And that's just not cricket.
That's what happened in broadband a while back too, which we're going to talk about later on tonight too.
So I think that bringing some of this into line and bringing some sanity to it, I'm hoping the ACCC has got the powers and the guts to bring it all into line, because otherwise it's going to end up a terrible mess for us users.
I don't think Graham Samuels is afraid of standing up and waving his fists around, because he's done that to a lot of fairly sizable organisations over the course of time, including Telstra.
Well, this is true.
So it'll be interesting to see what develops in that.
The final outcome will be where the telling is, though.
Exactly. Now, we also mentioned earlier on this evening about these little things coming out at the moment, the John Howard viruses sort of thing. Last week, we mentioned AUDA, which is the Australian Domain Namespace Organisation. They're the people that store the database for all the Australian domains.
Yep.
Have got some great podcasts to go and have a listen to, all about internet, spam, email, web browsing, all that sort of stuff. Very well worth. There's over 60 there that you can go and have a little bit of a listen to if you're looking to download some audio content.
And have we got another one?
We have got another one. Tonight is one about spyware, firewalls, banking safety, and passwords.
Spyware, Julian. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'd suggest you wear something not too conspicuous. Maybe a nice suit, a pen that shoots poison, perhaps a shoe with a phone in it.
No, I was talking about internet spyware. What do you know about it?
Spyware. Yeah, of course. Well, let's put it this way. I know more about how a jet engine works.
And how does a jet engine work?
I have absolutely no idea.
Spyware is software that performs certain behaviours, such as advertising, collecting personal information, or changing the configuration of your computer, generally without obtaining your consent.
Oh, lovely. More things to be worried about when it comes to the internet.
Well, this is the episode on safety and security.
Yeah, that's a fair point. So how do I know if I have spyware on my computer? Chris, will James Bond music play randomly? Dun 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 dun.
You might see pop-up advertisements even when you're not on the web. Maybe your homepage or your browser search settings have changed without your knowledge.
That's happened to me. My homepage kept changing from ferret racing results to some weird thing that I'd never seen before. Is that what spyware does?
Could very well be. Other indicators are a new toolbar in your browser that you didn't want and you find difficult to get rid of. Your computer takes longer than usual to complete certain tasks, or you experience a sudden rise in computer crashes.
Now I know I have spyware on my computer because all of those things are happening to me. How did it get there? How did it get on my computer?
Well, there are a number of ways that spyware can get onto your system. A common trick is to covertly install the software during the installation of software that you want, such as a music or a video file.
Great. Probably the John Denver collection I got from my mate Nobby. So how do I get rid of it?
The spyware or Nobby?
Spyware.
Okay, well, firstly, prevention is the best cure. When you're installing something on your computer, carefully read all the disclosures, including the license agreements and privacy statement. Sometimes the unwanted software is documented as being included in the software that you do want to load.
Boring, but worth it, I suppose.
True. Secondly, you can use a firewall. I can see your eyes are rolling around a bit. Don't worry, we'll be looking at firewalls in some detail during segment 5.
Okay, that's good.
And you can download anti-spyware programs that'll help identify and stop spyware entering your computer. A lot of these are free, and some good examples are Adware or Spybot.
Okay, so I've got spyware on my system. Should I just throw out my computer on a hard rubbish night?
Oh, we just need to exercise the spyware demons. Spyware is designed to be difficult to remove. If you try to install it, you might find that the program reappears as soon as you restart your computer. Sort of like having relatives come and stay at Christmas.
Okay, Chris, if you invent an anti-relative at Christmas program, put me down for a copy.
Of course. You may also need to download a tool to do the job for you. Several companies offer free or low-cost software that will check your computer for spyware and other unwanted software, and then it'll help you remove it.
Okay, how much money is the antivirus, anti-spyware, anti-adware, anti-trojan, anti-worm industry worth, Chris?
It's been estimated that the antivirus market will be worth $7.49 billion by 2012. Last year, the market was worth $3.27 billion.
So it's a constant struggle between virus makers and antivirus producers.
It's like an arms race of trickery, Julian. A new virus will be developed and the antivirus companies will scramble to produce protection from that virus. It's a never-ending battle.
Oh, man, it's like Superman and Lex Luthor.
You do understand the differences between reality and fiction, don't you?
Ah, so the battle rages on. And all these dodgy buggers out there. How safe am I doing things like internet banking then, Chris?
Well, after observing how many mistakes you make when you type, I don't think internet banking would be safe for you at all. But for those who are not pathological transposers of numbers, it is safe. It's safe because banks use a secure site. And when you deal with a secure site, it's virtually, although nothing is guaranteed in life, impossible for a third party to access your details. You can check if a site is secure by double-clicking on the padlock icon found at the bottom right-hand side of your browser window. And from there, you can verify the contents of their security certificate.
Okay, Chris, I'm just not fully convinced.
Well, all internet banking sites are encrypted. That means the information you send is scrambled when it leaves your computer, and it's then decoded at the bank's end. Which means that anyone snooping on your transmissions can't see what you're doing.
Okay, all right, I'm nearly convinced.
If through a bank's security not being sufficient, you have money stolen, you won't be liable for the loss, and the bank will be required to reconcile that loss for you. This is a highly unlikely event, as banks have a great deal of security and protective systems in place.
Beautiful. Now I'm convinced. So what about when the bank sends me emails?
Well, because of security threats, a bank or financial body will never send you an email that contains any requests for information, such as bank and password details. Regardless of who requests them, never. ever send your bank details or any passwords via the email system.
Okay.
The only place this will be asked for is within the bank's secure site.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned passwords, Chris. I have about 10 different passwords and for various functions I do, memberships and all that sort of stuff. Have you got any advice?
Well, my main advice is keeping passwords as safe as you would your PIN. Change your password with some frequency and never store your password in a program. Many email hosts, web browsers and web services will offer to store your password for you so that you don't need to type it in each time you want to use it. That is not recommended, as the programs could be breached.
Okay. My other problem is what to use as a password. I've heard all sorts of advice. What's the best policy when choosing a password?
Your password is the key to everything. You can use all the secure sites and do all the right things, but if someone can decode your password, then they've got access to everything. So, a couple of tips that may be of use.
Okay, that'd be great. I'm not convinced that my password, Julian01, is very tricky or hard to crack.
Yes, probably made all the easier by the fact that you've just told the whole world.
Damn!
When you choose a password, avoid using common words or names, even in other languages. It's probably best to avoid dates as well. One method that is used frequently when attackers attempt to guess passwords is called a brute force attack. In a brute force attack, the attacker basically tries possible passwords over and over and over and over again until they manage to break into the account.
The brutes!
Don't use the name of the computer or the name of your account.
Okay, note to self, don't use Eric as a password. Okay.
You call your computer Eric. You really are a very strange boy, aren't you?
Nah.
Do use a mixture of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and punctuation.
Okay, Chris, give me the world's safest possible password.
Yes, all right. Use letters from a phrase or song lyric.
Like a Johnny Cash song.
Like a Johnny Cash song. Think up a phrase, for example. Marx's Communist Manifesto has 8,196 words in it.
How do you know things like that?
Once you've decided on the phrase, choose the first letter from each word. So with Marx's Communist Manifesto has 8,196 words in it, I'll use the first letters of each word and all the numbers.
Okay.
So the password will be MCMH8196WII.
Ah!
It's a nice long password with a good mixture of characters, including numbers and upper and lower cases.
Great. So my new password is MCMH8196WII.
Excellent. You happy with that?
Totally.
Despite old tight lips here telling the whole world. Again.
Oh, bugger! Time for Chris's challenge. Chris, as part of this challenge, I have deliberately allowed a virus onto this computer.
You idiot, is the first response that springs to mind.
Your challenge, Chris, in under 2 minutes, is to turn this now infected computer into a perfectly healthy one.
And is there antivirus software on the computer?
Nope.
Well, then that's going to be the first step. Start the clock.
Go. What are you doing first there?
I've gone straight to the Norton Antivirus homepage. I'm clicking on the section called Trialware Centre. And I'm now clicking on the Antivirus 15-Day Trial.
Okay. Oh, what's happened there?
I've gone to a new page that's asking for my country, region and email address. I trust them, so I'll enter those details. Done. It tells me instructions will be emailed to me. And here's the email now.
Wow, that was almost instant. Chris has gone into his email and opened up the email he's just received from Norton.
Yep, and there's a link in the email that I've clicked on.
Where's that go? Where?
It's taken me to the download site, and I now click the download trial version link, having read and agreed the conditions of use in under 2 minutes.
Okay.
The antivirus software is now downloading.
Okay.
Taking a little bit longer. And here it is, all downloaded. Okay, so now I'll click on the install button and it'll install onto the computer. Done.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's welcoming me and it's asking me if I want to run a scan now, so I'm going to click yes, and away it goes.
So as it searches, I can't believe that for all the problems a virus can cause, the simple fact is in about 2 minutes, you can have yourself protected from all that worry, Chris.
As best I can, yes. I can't actually do it in 2 minutes because the scanning takes a few minutes, but I'm going to come back to it when the scan's completed.
Back again. So, how did we go, Chris?
Well, the scan's finished and the antivirus software has identified one virus and placed it in quarantine. It tells me the virus was called bloodhound.exploit67 and would I like to delete it? Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone.
Oh,
and the computer is clean once more.
Well done. That was very easy. Considering the benefits you've just obtained, that was great.
Thank you. And Julian?
Yes, Chris?
Please don't go putting any more viruses on our computers. You handling them is like a child playing in a gun shop. If it goes wrong, it'll go terribly wrong.
And that was Chris's challenge.
are listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio, and hopefully we're all a little bit more versed in viruses now to fix them. What do you reckon, Graham?
It was a good little spot, wasn't it? They made some very good points. A couple of things that I'd like to add to it, though.
Fire away.
One is that there's another really good anti-spyware program around that's free, and oddly enough, comes from Microsoft.
Not 123 Customer Care or something, no?
No. It's called Windows Defender. It'll work if you've got a genuine copy of Windows XP with Service Pack 2, or these days if you've got Vista.
Yeah.
I think it comes with Vista, actually.
And what about the Home Edition? Does it come with that as
it'll,
well?
It'll work with the Home Edition of Windows XP, as long as you've got all the updates loaded and it's genuine.
Yep.
Now you can just go to the Microsoft website, click on Downloads, you'll find the link.
You have
Windows
to validate
Defender.
And do all
you
that
have
sort
to validate
of stuff,
and do all that already. Stuff, prove that your copy is genuine. That's normal with Microsoft these days. Download and install Windows Defender. It actually does a really good job.
I've never had any complaints with it.
I've been impressed by it.
But it's not antivirus, though. It's just
it's
a Trojan
It's not antivirus.
Thing.
It's just anti-spyware.
So bear that in mind,
yeah, you everybody. Need antivirus as well. But, yeah, this anti-spyware is rather good. The other thing they said was that the online banking stuff, you know, make sure it's on a secure website and the certificate's right. A couple of other points. Never, ever go to your internet banking site by clicking on any link anywhere, especially in an email, but any link anywhere. Always, to make
type
sure you're
your
on
browser.
The right, you're going where you think you are, type it yourself into the address bar of your browser. And the other thing is that if, no matter how good the security is, can be 128-bit, can be unbreakable security, if you've got spyware on your machine, then the bad guys can get your password.
They just...
So
they,
make
what
sure...
What they call keystroke loggers.
Keystroke loggers
and
all that
stuff.
And then
that just gets automatically sent back to
that's
these
right.
people that
so
shouldn't
have
them.
So if you've got spyware on your machine or your machine's got unexplained pop-ups and all that sort of stuff... Or
don't log
slow,
onto your internet banking.
That's right. And if you you do...
Good point.
If you realise later on that this is what's happened, change the password on your internet banking after you've cleaned everything up.
Yeah, something like that happened at our place, but we won't go into that.
What I like about some of the websites, the banking websites these days, is where you have to click on certain pictures. So one of the banking websites I go to, it actually has a series of pictures. There might be 9, and you have to choose 3 of them in a certain order to actually perform a transaction. Mm-hmm. And therefore, they you know the spyware can't capture what it is, and they move the pictures around, and there's not just 9 of them. There might be 9 on your screen, but that's from a list of a big group, maybe 20 or something. Mm. So that
and
works
this is
quite
to
well.
Counter that. But I mean, the best defense is to have your machine cleaned up. Otherwise, you're really fighting
absolutely.
An uphill battle.
And there's also the new third party technologies that's happening now, like the SMS, National Australia Bank,
that's
doing
right,
SMS
yes.
to your mobile, which you register with their banking, so that you say, please transfer this from here to here.
Yep.
And it goes beep, beep, and you enter in the number off your SMS, and then it does the transfer. That's pretty good.
We use something at work called a secure ID token, which is something similar the banks are doing
there's
now.
There's little Tamagotchis that people carry around.
That's right.
And they
little Tamagotchis
bring up a different number every time you
every 30
click the button.
Seconds
yeah.
or something. They
oh, really?
Change numbers, and yeah, we use them for work,
yep.
but you also get them but for banking
what
websites
you, what,
now.
What sort of things? To gain access to something or to log on to something? Or?
No, to gain access. So you've got to have your login, your PIN.
And your Tamagotchi.
And this Tamagotchi number, yeah, effectively, which change all the time. Just sort of, it looks like random, but it's obviously not. But
it's a pity the world's come to this, isn't it?
It is.
Anyway, now moving on to other technological wizardry this week, Mark. This is your gig. Australians are now more and truly obsessed with their mobile phones than ever before. In a national survey, which came out just recently, Australians spend more than half an hour a day on their mobile phones.
Is that all?
And that 1 in 5 users, this is 1 in 5, 20% of the population, have an unhealthy obsession with it. The Queensland University of Technology conducted the survey, which is the first of its kind in the country, and Diana James said about 20% of her respondents consider themselves high or heavy users with monthly bills of over $500.
Oh, my goodness.
You'd have to work hard these days with caps and things. That
yeah.
Even the big phone company gives you a cap these days.
She says that some people have developed an obsession with their phones, and if you were spending $500 a month on your mobile phone, I'd be checking into rehab just quietly.
Yes.
Instead of consuming the technology in a healthy manner, the technology starts overtaking other aspects of their life, being financially, having debts they can't pay, spending money on credit for the phone at the expense of clothing, textbooks, or even basic items of food as a result of the survey. So that's pretty scary when people are that dependent. It's a bit like a drug, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Next, there'll be hold-ups, and people will be thieving for, what's your mobile?
To pay their phone bill.
So, very interesting development there in Australia's obsession with mobile phones. But, Mark, Telstra have developed the next level of technology on their Next G network. What happened? 14.4, we've got a bit of an extra speed.
That's right, yes. So, what I'd probably going to do in the upcoming months is to provide you with a mobile technology update. It could be related to political or handsets or anything, but so this is the first of those, and we'll kick it off because with some data information, because Seoul announced at Investor Day that we've upgraded the NextG network to 14.4 megabits per second in the downlink.
Now let's put that into context. 14.4, your average ADSL 1 connection, 1.5.
Although I went to 5 megabits.
I went to 8 megabits today.
Wow.
On my ADSL. But your average one, 1.5. So that's considerably faster than your average ADSL 1.
Now, this is.
Absolutely, yes.
To put it into a little bit more perspective, your network at your office, most people's offices have these blue cables that run around and plug into their computers. That runs at 100 megabits. So we're not quite as fast as that.
Not yet. No,
but right. The previous generation of that technology that either ran on the blue cables or it might have run on the black, you know, coax cable with the funny connectors, that ran at 10 megabits per second. So it's faster than that.
That's right. Yep. So,
plus, according to the press release that I read, it works 200 kilometres from the base station at 14.4. That's impressive, isn't it?
Well, you didn't read that press release quite right, I believe. So
I didn't read it quite right, or no, it wasn't written quite right?
A bit of both.
I think I heard it on some of the major news channels. They were actually broadcasting this. What?
I reread it. Knowing the technology, I reread that press release, and it said that on Investor Day that you can get 14.4 megabits per second. And at the same time, and they also turned on the latest lot of software which allows you to make calls out to 200 kilometres an hour. Now, I'm not saying that you won't get 14.4 megabits per second at 200 kilometres, but I'd say it's very, very unlikely.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, to put that in perspective, the further you are away from the base station, the more power your mobile needs and the more power the base station needs to talk to you because you're further away, so you need more power.
Yep.
Okay. That power has got a finite bucket, if you like. And if you're using it to make a voice call, fine, good, no worries, everything works fine. But when you want extra power to do higher speed data, and it's like making many phone calls at once if you want, running them all in parallel, as an analogy, if you like, the base station just doesn't have that much to provide you with that high speed data. So when you're talking about the 14.4 megabits per second, it's under really good radio conditions.
So it's 14.4 megabits per second if you're standing next to the base station and you're the only person using it.
Yes.
Needs a little star on the bottom of the disclaimer, doesn't it?
Well, they've released that, and I've got some information here.
Now, that being said, it's still going to be a lot faster, isn't it? It's still going to be quite fast.
That's right. Well, here's some information that Telstra's released. So they give you some comparisons. So if you're looking at GSM GPRS, you're looking at peak speeds of 96 kilobits per second, but average speeds of 30 to 40 kilobits, all right? The old CDMA 1XRTT, which this new network's 25 times faster than, it gave you 80 to 110 kilobits per second average speed, but it actually peaked at 153. Well, when we take this 14.4 megabits that's been announced now, it's a peak speed. It's over the air. It's a peak speed. It doesn't actually continue to run like that, and it's not a user through speed.
I see.
Okay? So it's over the air speed. I mean, it has to be. That's what's going across the air. It's real, but it's not what the user will perceive as the speed.
So the way this will work, this will make it feel fast, but you wouldn't want to download, you know, the latest copy of Vista over it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it still might be faster than your dial-up connection.
So, oh, yes.
You know, it's all relative, isn't it?
It would be faster than your dial-up connection by a fair margin.
Well, we're being powered by NextG tonight here on the laptop, and it's going exceptionally well.
Yeah.
Very fast.
The actual user perception, just using the email, no problem at all, you know, and that sort of thing. So, to put it in perspective.
So, ignoring the numbers, it is going to feel fast.
Yep. I'll give you the they tell you that before it was 3.6 megabits per second before it was upgraded, and that gave you 550 kilobits per second to 1.5 megabits per second. Now it's been upgraded, it gives you 550 kilobits per second to 3,000 kilobits per second, which is 3 megabits. So the average user throughput will go between, you know, half a megabit and 3 megabits
still 3
per
meg.
Second.
And
so
we're getting a bit techy. That's
broadband in anybody's language, though.
But we need to explain these things, don't we? The 14.4 is what goes across the air. It's not what the user's going to get. Let's be honest about it. It's going to be somewhere in that 550 to 3,000 kilobits per second. You know?
But still, that's going to be damn sight faster
and
than your average.
User, that's right.
Yep.
That's exactly right.
And considering one part of Sol's press statement, which goes for about an hour, and it is downloadable off the Telstra website. You can go and have a good watch and see what Sol had to say. The technology which Telstra is rolling out, and let me just say from the outset that I'm not a shareholder or anything like that, is apparently the fastest anywhere in the world. So Telstra is setting a trend here, globally speaking, and the reason why there's not a lot of handsets or technological devices out there to connect to this is because no one else has got it yet. This is new. This is cutting-edge stuff, and, of course,
that's
the network
correct.
Is now in and sort of running. Obviously, Mark will probably be able to say there's a lot more network to roll out yet, but at the bottom line is the reason why there's no devices is because no one else is doing it yet.
Because this is the first time it's been done on
right.
a scale, yeah. So
the handsets that will be available about mid this year will be about 7.2 megabits per second, so we're not reaching the 14, but the 14 that's running at the base station does allow multiple users of 3.6. If you currently got a 3.6 card or a phone that does 3.6, you can run more of them, so they've upgraded the backhaul capacity to it.
Okay, so they put bigger pipes into the base station.
That's right, so we can handle
more. Because that was going to be another question, because if you've got lots of people doing all this broadband stuff through the mobile phone network, you're going to need big pipes going into those base stations.
Yep.
And when you think about the base stations too, base stations not only sort of look after the data of what we're talking about now, but they also have to deal with this thing called voice.
Yes, now, don't forget the voice network.
Now let's just say, how is voice prioritised in a network base station over data? Does it have a priority?
Number one.
Okay.
Yep, always. We always give all the traffic to the voice customers first, and what's left over of the shared resources gets given to data users.
All right, so let's just say we're at a popular resort on a weekend. There's a festival on, for example, where it could be anywhere. It could be Queensland, could be South Australia. Now, unless the network has been, like, there's more cells in there, a cow or whatever you call them has come in to provide more capacity.
If we're doing our job right, then we would have put a cow in there knowing that that special event was coming
That's
up.
That's a cell on wheels.
A cell on wheels. Yep.
They wheel them in and away they go.
A portable base station.
So let's say all the voice, there's lots of people using their mobile phones on the NextG network or on any network, I guess, for that example. Whatever's left over, and let's face it, on a very popular environment, there's normally you can't make a call anyway. So your data options are going to be exceptionally limited, if not available, when the cell reaches voice capacity. Is that correct to say that?
Yeah, I think we get down to a minimum that you'll always get. So if that minimum's 384 kilobits per second, you'll always get your 384 kilobits per second. You know, it'll be considered a minimum data speed.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get that as a circuit switch type of mode, if you like. But you know, we don't often have that capacity issue unless there's a natural disaster. So we're talking about the Formula One Grand Prix coming up. You know, it's going to be three.
Is that classified as a national disaster?
No. But we're talking about, we know about that. We're going to put three cows in the middle of the track.
Three
cells on wheel, because we know there'll be lots of people, 100,000 people around the track, and we need that extra
capacity.
Every
one of them yapping on their phone.
Yep. It's when there's a bushfire.
What about sending all these pictures
disaster
and video these days? Everyone will, hey, look at this, and I get the video camera and everyone will be there seeing this little speck going up and down the track on their video phone.
Showing off to their friends.
Exactly.
Yeah, as they do every year.
Because we can. There's no other reason than that. That's the joys of go Australia
and
technology.
In the corporate tents do that sort of thing, yeah.
Yes, I could imagine.
So there you go. Now, just an update on the cards. There's a GT Max card, which is no longer supported. But I'm sort of getting conflicting information, but the information I have...
These are the cards that plug into your notebook computer.
Cards, yep. Okay, so there's a couple there. That there's the ZTE one and there's the Sierra AirCard 875. Both run at 3.6 megabits per second at the moment, but it will be upgradable to 7.2 in the near future. By the middle of the year, you'll have been sent something, if you've got one of those cards, to upgrade you to the 7.2 megabits per second. There's also been an increase in the uplink. So where before you were only getting 384 kilobits per second, now 1.9 megabits per second.
Well, that's pretty good. That means you can send video to
So, and I think part of the upgrade was that if you're going to go 14.4 eventually in the downlink, you need faster than 384 just to be able to acknowledge all those packets coming in the downlink.
Yeah.
You know, so you need a faster uplink. So we've got
need
the 1.9.
For speed, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is.
So, now, last week on the program, we had Justin Dunlop in talking about all things Macintoshish, and one of the great things we talked about was Apple's new iPhone. Telstra has ruled itself out of the running to carry Apple's new iPhone mobile when it's released next year, with a senior executive launching a bit of a critique on the device. Telstra's operating chief, Greg Wynne, considered the telco second in charge. The man who oversees most of the big product decisions believes the iPhone may meet some significant operational challenges when it makes the market debut. And I thought we discussed that beautifully last week and said 2.5G.
Yeah.
And as a result, it's all being wound out. When's 2.5G's out by January next year, isn't it? Is that about right?
Yeah, January next year. Oh, yeah, January, February.
Won't even
like
see
that.
Market here before the network gets turned off. Is that pretty much the case, isn't it? Because I don't think that's due out in Australia until middle of next year.
Yeah, well, that's right. I guess if it's GPRS or something, it'll still be around.
Anyway, well, thank you very much for that update this week. We'll have more updates from Mark across.
We'll talk about devices in the future and other bits and pieces that are going on in the telecommunications industry.
And if you're buying a new laptop, be wary of the card that you want for it. We'll talk about that one day shortly too. I learnt the hard way, but life's like that. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron is not with us this evening, if you've noticed his absence, but he is here in spirit, actually. He had a bit of a technological challenge during the week, and he's going to share that technological challenge with us about now.
After spending an hour and a half on the phone this morning with a customer having office upgrade problems, I thought I'd seek solace from the thousands of Tech Talk listeners that no doubt have faced this very issue. I'm sure everyone listening has installed or upgraded a program at one time in their life, only to discover that another program mysteriously no longer works. In the IT industry, it's called DLL hell, and it usually occurs soon after upgrading, installing, or removing a software package from your PC. Mac listeners, just sit back and relax for the time being. So what is a DLL? A dynamic link library is a small file on a Windows system which contains commonly used instructions for computer applications. The key to efficient programming and having a consistent user interface is the ability to reuse useful small snippets of code. These snippets of code are contained within DLLs. Let me give you an example. If I write a program that lets you save files, I want the dialog which you see on the screen to be consistent with other applications. In fact, if you go into a new program for the first time and click File Open, there's a certain expectation as to what you're going to see. Rather than rewriting the whole open or save dialog, programmers add a reference in their applications to what we call the Windows Common Control DLL. Now, this is one of thousands of DLLs which replicate a useful, commonly recognized interface. But DLLs aren't just used for application dialogs on the screen. They're also used for communicating with webcams and modems, talking to printers, and managing system-level functions which users don't and shouldn't have any exposure to. The good thing about DLLs is that they can be shared between multiple programs. This is one reason why applications like Word, Excel, Outlook, and even non-Microsoft programs like Firefox and Photoshop have the same look and feel when you click on a menu or save a file. Unfortunately, when programs are upgraded or updated or uninstalled, DLLs are often removed or overwritten, usually by bigger, better improved versions of the original DLL. However, if the new DLL isn't backwards compatible with the old version, that is to say it doesn't support everything that the old DLL did, well, what can I say? Things start to break. Welcome to DLL hell. To prevent this so-called DLL stomping, Microsoft invented a thing in Windows 2000 and XP called Windows File Protection, or WFP. This was designed to prevent overwriting or replacement of certain system files. WFP protects system files by running in the background and detecting attempts to replace protected system files. But Microsoft is not solely to blame. The concept of reusable code libraries exists on all PC operating systems, including Linux. So you ask, why don't we see these problems in Apple Macs? Good question. When you install an application, you wouldn't expect it to modify the internal workings of your system, would you? Well, this is the big difference between Windows and Macs. Applications installed on Mac OS X don't modify the internal workings of the operating system.
but install nearly any program on Windows, and it's a safe bet you'll have DLL files littered all across your hard disk, in many cases overwriting existing DLLs with the same file name.
Hello, I'm a Mac.
Hello, I'm a PC.
We have a lot in common these days. We both run
Microsoft Office. We share files. It's great. We just get along.
PC?
Yeah, I had to restart there. You know how it is.
No, actually, I don't.
Oh, what? Macs don't have to...
Had him, then we lost him. I'm going to go get IT. Keep an eye on him.
So how can we avoid DLL hell? And what can we do if we find ourselves stuck there? There are certainly ways we can minimize our exposure to conflicting versions of DLLs on our computers. Only install software from reputable developers. By this, I mean large-name software houses like Microsoft, Adobe, and Macromedia. Only install released software. Avoid beta test and so-called release candidate software, especially on production or mission-critical systems. If you're upgrading a previous version of software, make sure you follow the manufacturer's instructions very carefully. If you upgrade Microsoft Office, for example, try to avoid having Outlook 2000 running on the same machine as Word 97 and Excel 2003. In other words, keep everything current and don't mix and match versions of programs in the same product suite. Keep an eye on the Windows Event Viewer if you do run into problems, and don't be afraid to search for those error codes on Google and the Microsoft support site. Simply keeping your software up to date will avoid long-term DLL problems. Windows 2000 and XP are now designed to let software developers install DLLs in specific application folders and flag them as not being shareable. At work, IT departments usually lock you out of the administrator account on your workstation for a good reason. The same should apply at home. Don't log on to Windows with an administrative account to perform day-to-day work, like writing documents and checking your email. If something is downloaded and installs itself without your knowledge, not only could you end up in DLL hell, but also find spyware and viruses have made themselves right at home on your computer. At the end of the day, programmers are largely responsible for keeping you out of DLL hell. But don't despair, if things start to go screwy after an upgrade or new installation, a competent IT professional can nearly always fix the problem.
Tech Talk Radio wants your feedback. Call the Tech Talk Radio feedback line or visit our website and tell us your thoughts on the show. Tell us your likes and dislikes, your technical dilemmas and program suggestions. Call 1300 664 882 and leave a voice message. That's 1300 664 882 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, and click on the feedback link.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
An experience that got left out of that. Thank you very much, Dr. Ron. That was very informative, all about dynamic link libraries and things like that. Microsoft use disks at the moment which have got holograms, and they're quite hard to read, especially if you're visually impaired, or even if you're not visually impaired. You have to hold it up to the light and twist it around to make sure that you're using the Windows XP installer or the Microsoft Office installer. Now, for those that aren't quite savvy with what you would expect to see when you put one of those disks in a drive, Dr. Ron actually ended up doing an IT support call during the course of the week, and it says press L to format the partition when they were trying to do an upgrade to their Office suite. Someone had put the wrong disk into the drive.
They had the Windows disk in instead of the Office disk.
That's the one. So.
Oh, dear.
If you're in doubt, it always pays to make that phone call to someone that knows. As he said, nearly always.
Yeah, don't just click next. Usually, if you read it, even if you don't understand all of it, you'll get the gist of what it's trying to do. And if it's going to do something bad, like destroy your entire hard disk, you probably want to be aware of that before it happens.
Windows XP has these things called rollback points, don't they? Where you can actually, if you install something and it does dangerous things, yes, you can roll back to a particular point.
You can't roll back if you've deleted your entire partition using the Windows installer.
No, that's a problem. But if you put dodgy software on, how effective is it rolling back, Graham?
It's a bit of a...
If you don't have a restore point, you can't go back, can you? That's really the bottom line.
And often when you do go back to a restore point, you break other things when you do it. So you lose other changes that you've made since the last restore point was made.
So you do the restore point just before you install the software.
And that would be ideal, yeah.
You've got to remember to do
but
it, though.
But the restore point only fixes settings. It doesn't always put back all the DLLs and things that have changed. So sometimes it's not as effective as you'd hope.
Because there's a thing on a PC called a registry, which is like a little file which stores all your program settings and operating system
settings.
Little
database that has all your settings in it for all kinds of things. Yeah.
Knows about your machine, what you've got plugged into it.
Millions of settings, yeah.
And that, in essence, is what it takes a snapshot of,
isn't it?
That's right,
yeah. That's right.
So it won't roll back and unerase something that you've accidentally erased, I guess, in the throes of putting new software
on. Not necessarily, no.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about the internet. We're having a bit of an internet theme tonight. The ABS, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, have released some interesting figures in relation to our habits and what we do online. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, as well as ADSL2, which, once again, the ACCC, which is the consumer watchdog, had a bit of a growl at a few ISPs about stop misleading people about ADSL2. Now, that's
good on them too.
An interesting point, and we're going to talk all about that in just a few moments.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio. Subscribing to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is so easy. It's child's play.
Podcasting's so easy, even my little brother can do it.
Step one, visit the iTunes Music Store and search for Tech Talk Radio in the podcast section. Step two, click subscribe and you're done. Now every week, you'll be able to listen to Tech Talk Radio whenever, wherever, and however you like. You could be mowing the lawn, on a train, in a car, on a plane, at work,
poor car visiting the relatives, washing the car. It's hard to press it.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
The internet is a very sort of, what could I say, it's an essential service now, would you agree, Graham?
To me it is, yes.
It's very interesting. A lot of people Australia-wide are now expecting to be able to connect to the internet either through wireless telephony or through traditional methods,
yes.
through dialing up through a phone line and a phone system. Well, the Australian Bureau of Statistics, which are the organisation that look after all of our technology, I guess, all of our census and counting and numbers and things, actually did a survey which came out last Friday and told us all about what the state of media is in respect to the broadband side of things. This survey was basically conducted amongst ISPs, which is the people that provide internet to the consumer, or the ISPs, as you've probably all heard them referred to.
The Internet Service Provider.
That's right. And it was conducted around the 30th of September 2006. It was the first full collection since March when they did previously before that. But the bottom line of it is that a third of Australia is now connected to the internet in one form or another. And we have a bit of a passion for faster broadband too, which is, I guess, pretty good because we're now starting to see high-speed internet in this country, which has only sort of become a thing possible in probably the last 6 months, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, true broadband, yeah.
I mean, comparing it to what the rest of the world
people were rolling out, things that they called broadband that weren't really.
I see broadband, and whether it's true broadband or that fake stuff, I see it as a necessity these days because when you look at dial-up, the technology's moved on now and people build web pages that are very interactive and intense with their graphics and sounds and that sort of thing. And it's just painful if you're trying to do it on dial-up like we did maybe 5 to 10 years ago where there was no pages like that or the very few of them. Now all of them are like that. You've just got to have broadband or it's a frustrating experience.
Dr. Ron said recently there's over a million pages online now, a million websites. That's a lot of websites. And, of course, a lot of them are all media-rich because that's where we're heading.
Yep.
At the end of September 2006, there were 6.65 million active internet subscribers in Australia comprising of 826,000 businesses and government subscribers and over 5.83 million households. So, but even still, that sort of surprises me from a business point of view that not all businesses are really online yet because I don't know how you could live without it for email. And
the ones that aren't need to call me.
You can put your number out later.
No, there's places that will just never use it. My father
owns his
own business, and he's a truck driver, and he'll never have a need for the internet as far as he's concerned, you know, other than to keep in touch with the family, which he's not, you know, mum can do sort of.
But he might have an internet connection at home, and his kids use it while he's out driving his truck, and when he comes home to do his tax, he can use it to submit his tax return using the e-tax.
Yeah, that's why he pays an accountant. You know, I can say he's a Luddite. He calls himself a Luddite. So.
Well, he's not doing too bad if he's doing his tax online, let me tell you. To find your way through the ATO system is quite challenge at the best of times.
He pays an accountant to do that sort of thing. He doesn't need the internet.
Oh, you're good. The number of non-dial-up subscribers was over 3.91 million. That's obviously people that connected via ADSL, compared with dial-up subscribers of 2.75 million.
So we've got more broadbanders than we have dial-ups.
Yeah,
now.
But I think that might also take into consideration wireless, because wireless has had a fairly popular increase of...
Wireless can count as broadband.
Well, yeah, theoretically, yes. Non-dial-up subscribers increased almost 1.8 million people at the end of March 2005 to 3.91 million people at the end of September 2006. That is over a million people, nearly 2 million people in the course of 1 year for dial-up alone, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. Matt, potentially, what do you reckon? That's people that are outside of the range of high-speed wireless and high-speed broadband.
Those are people who are getting new dial-up services.
New dial-up services, yeah.
How odd.
Non-dial-up subscribers represented 59% of the total internet subscribers in Australia at the end of September 2006, compared with 30% at the end of March 2005. So there's been a considerable increase in demand in the internet just in the last 12 months alone in Australia. Digital subscriber lines, so this is the ADSL that we've been talking about, continue to be the dominant access technology used for non-dial-up subscribers, with 3 million, almost 70% of the total non-dial-up subscribers being connected using this means. Wireless technology, mobile and fixed, is showing growth with 186,000, or just under 5% of the non-dial-up access. So if you're connected with internet in this country, chances are it's ADSL over the phone line.
Yep.
Which makes a lot of sense because, I mean, if you don't have the Big Pond cable running past or your Optus cable running past, then your only other option is wireless, and wireless is only in certain areas, isn't it? So
that's true. Well, now, thanks to NextG,
it's in probably most of it. That's exactly right. But, you know, the other operators who offer broadband via wireless, your Unwired, and there's another company out there.
They don't work over the mobile phone network. They have their own radio channels,
but they're still only around the Melbournes, the Sydneys, the
major capital centres.
And the really busy areas.
So how does Wired... It's basically one... It's like the old mobile phone technology, isn't it? One big tower scattered relatively... Well, they might have
several towers in the metropolitan area.
Yeah, but it's
And they've got their own dedicated channels. They're not using the mobile phone network.
Yep.
And you buy a modem with an antenna on it to connect to it.
Yep. And that's how it works, isn't it? It's not designed to be a mobile device.
It's not a cellular network. Yeah. You're not able to transmit... My understanding is you do not move from one base station to another. So you have multiple base stations where you'll get a connection, but you don't actually do a seamless handoff from one to the other.
It'd be very interesting sitting here in 12 months' time looking at the ABS stats for next year when NextG takes hold, because NextG is not really part of this because it's only been released since October. Mm-hmm. So it's...
So you might see an increase in the wireless numbers, you reckon?
Oh, potentially.
Hmm.
Potentially.
Well, I'd certainly hope that NextG will fill in some holes that are left out by the other networks.
I think so, and it'll certainly give access to people who would not otherwise normally have access. And, of course, like anything new, the price is potentially quite high for those that want to access it. As competition,
although, to be fair, there are plans even now on NextG that are, you know, not outrageously expensive. If you've got no other choice and you need internet and you're running a business, then there's no question that you'd definitely be looking closely at it.
Mm, definitely.
As a business user, I don't think it's very expensive at all if you're choosing the high end plans and that sort of thing from a business point of view. From a user's point of view, maybe not so much. But you always pay a premium to have that mobility function.
That's right.
All right. One of the other interesting things which came out of this survey is the number of ISPs dropped by 32% between March and September. That's a big drop. ISPs are a dying race.
Yeah, there used to be a dime a dozen, not so much anymore. Everyone was starting them up, weren't they?
I think the industry is becoming quite a mature industry now. Mm-hmm. Those who are well and truly entrenched and have a good infrastructure are doing well. Those that resell products, I think, are probably doing reasonably well. But
I think it was also a lot easier in the days of dial-up being dominant to set up a modem bank and a pipe coming into it.
Your backyard, your back shed.
And with the move to ADSL, it's become a little bit more professional, and a lot of the smaller operators have been eaten up.
Now, one of the when Sol did his thing the other day, just at the Telstra half-year announcement, he took a few questions about ADSL from some of the journos. One of them is probably one of it's a good question in relation to what happens. Why can't you have a phone line, which is just ADSL, doesn't have a telephone service on it and all that sort of stuff?
Let's hear what he had to say.
Hear about this. You'll hear the question, but a beautiful dodge.
So is there any possibility of launching some sort of cheaper stripped-down service where customers could just get, say, a line rental connection for the supply of broadband but not the phone as well?
Well, there's a lot of options that are possible, but at this stage I'm not going to comment on next steps and future pricing plans and other initiatives that we might have.
So, blatantly, Sol says, no comment.
I'm not going to answer that question, because it is one of them. It's an outrageous cost. You want a line to put ADSL on, and you have to pay for a phone service whether you're going to use it or not.
We're one of the only countries in the world, I believe, that actually makes you do that, from what I've been told. I haven't physically researched that, but that's what I've been told.
Who was that regulator we were talking about before? Hello, I hope you're listening still, because...
His name's Graham. You should remember that.
That's true, too.
Mr. Samuel to you.
Now, one of the other interesting pieces of news that came out this week is, speaking of Graham Samuel, good link. Thank you, Graham. The ACCC have had a bit of a go at the ISPs for misleading people. Is using up to speeds in your broadband promotion false advertising is the question that's being asked. For many, many years, we've been amongst those pointed out the habits of broadband users with the up to descriptions.
Yes.
You know, you can get up to this.
Up to 24 megabits per second.
As we were just talking about with the mobile technology. Yes, up to, if you're the only person using the particular...
And you're standing right next to the base station.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So is this going to be misleading? If someone comes knocking on your door and said, hey, I can sell your broadband up to 24 megabits per second, what do you do? Are you going to buy it, or is it misleading?
Well, I'd be asking them some fairly pointed questions at that point.
You'll see all of Telstra's advertising say up to with average speeds. They'll always put the average speeds in there, and they're very critical of those who don't.
But do they explain anywhere that you don't get up to 24 megabits per second on ADSL2. What you get is a proportion of 24 megabits per second, depending on how far from the exchange you are.
Yeah, well, I think
why don't they word it in that honest way?
I'm not sure, but I know that their mobiles, like we talked about earlier today, they produce all those results and send them out. And one of those dial-up people were saying you could get... ADSL speeds on dial-up, and they said up to. Remember that one we were talking about? One of the opposition to Telstra?
Yes.
And they talked about the speeds you could get, and they only said you can get this speed or up to this speed, but never told you what the average speed would be, and I think that's where it's very critical and misleading. So you want to see what the average is, you know?
Yep.
So what do you think the future is for advertising? Do you think people are going to come clean, or you think it's going to be a bit more of this dirty pool until Graham Samuel comes out and says,
I think what will happen is that, as with other technologies, people, the general public, and people through listening to shows like ours and other discussions will become more aware.
Tech savvy?
Yeah. People knew, eventually it caught on, everybody understood that 56K modems didn't run at 56K. Everybody knew that your 56K modem connected at 48 or 50.
Yeah.
And everybody got their head around that after a little
nothing
while.
Nothing new, is it? We're going back to dial-up here. We talked about the mobile today. We're talking about dial-up now.
That's
it's
right.
It's been happening for years, and we're just going to...
I think people will get the idea that, ADSL2 means a proportion of 24 megabits per second.
And it's so hard to put a figure on what you actually get because it's so variable for all these things. So you have to say what your maximum is as a reference point to what someone else has got.
It is difficult for the providers because you don't know what the speed will be for any individual connection.
If you're interested in what we've been talking about tonight, visit the Australian Bureau of Statistics website, abs.gov.au. Do a search for document number 8153. Yes, that's its name, rank, and serial number. And you'll be returned. Hopefully, you'll get to see the Internet Activity Statement, which was September 2006. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
If you want the latest Tech Talk Radio on your smartphone or PDA, visit the new Tech Talk Radio website, ttr.mobi. This is a lightweight website designed especially for small screen devices, so it loads quickly and provides easy navigation around our most popular links. You can find out what's on the current program, check show archives, and access links to the regular website. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to ttr.mobi.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Mark, you had an interesting dilemma with the Tech Talk Radio Mobi site recently. Did it not download on your particular phone? I think you and Dr. Wrong were having a bit of a dialogue about this.
That's right. Yes, we're still trying to sort out some of those issues.
What happened, you know?
I went to listen on the Mobi site and nothing. It timed out. Gateway timeout I got.
And has the problem been resolved yet? Do we know what it was?
No, we don't know what it was. We're still working on it. We've put up another link and that one works. And we're trying to work out whether it's related to the file size or whether it's related to the hosting site. So we're still going through those.
But it was working on some phones and not others, is that right?
Yeah, so if you took a PDA, for example.
I love technology,
don't
you?
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it?
Well, it wasn't a phone as such. If you took a PDA where you're really running Windows as itself,
yeah.
You know, whether it was a Windows CE, the mobile version of Windows, whatever it is.
Windows Mobile these days, I think they call it.
Windows Mobile, whatever it is.
There's a Vista version of that coming out too.
It's just like a PC or a laptop where you actually... It brings up the media player, and that just worked, no problem. But it's really looking like a PC or a laptop in that case.
Yeah.
It's when you're actually on the mobile phone itself that it wasn't working. And we're looking through... We've been told it's browser issues, and we're trying to sort out what it is in the browser that doesn't like... that particular website or that link.
It's funny how technology just does that to you from time to time. There's no explanation when you, from a techie point of view, while you try and work it out. You sit there and go, why is it so?
Yeah, software company A interprets the standard one way and software company B interprets it a different way and, yeah, everything falls apart in between.
Yes, it happens to everyone, so don't think that technology's picking on you out there, so...
On the other hand, if you are having that sort of trouble, and particularly with the Tech Talk Radio sites, but with any sites, jump on the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and tell us all about it. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And you'll find people there who can help.
I've had lots of people say, why isn't the Shoutcast stream up tonight? Well, Dr. Ron's he's had to work this evening, and he looks after that one, so unfortunately that's
why. I believe the Windows Media stream's going strong, though.
It is. A Willy Wonka-style Apple flagship is proposed for Melbourne's Fun Factory. Willy Wonka, you know, remember him? The chocolate factory
dude, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Great film back in the good old days, but...
New one wasn't bad either.
No. I don't know. I didn't see that one. That was... Yeah, but anyway, that's not our show. For those of you who are Apple gurus in Melbourne, very shortly, they're going to plan a new $200 million development at the site of the old Jam Factory there on the corner of Chapel Street and Turek Road, which is going to be...
Right in the middle of all the trendy people live, where the trendy people have their cups of coffee.
Exactly, and the trendy people with all that cups of coffee will have a lot of disposable income so they can go over there and buy their new iPhone. They won't be able to plug it into a network, but they can buy their new iPhone.
Yep.
They can buy their new anything, Mac, basically, iTunes-type sort of devices, you know, iPods and iTVs and iThis and iThat.
This is a research place, like $200 million for this store, is that?
Apparently. This comes from an Apple gossip store. Gossip site, should I say.
$190 million of the $200 million is spent on glass, if you look at the...
some pretty impressive pictures of
drawings,
it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be very interesting. That's the old Fun Factory site here in Melbourne, and there's also one planned for Sydney too, but I don't have the details of that at hand. But that'll make a lot of Mac people fairly happy, I would imagine.
It'll make a lot of people fairly happy.
Especially JD, you know, he'll be going past and it'll be like a magnet just drawing him in. He's our regular guru here, comes and talks all sorts of things Mac-ish. On the other side of the coin, Microsoft released Vista recently and everyone's gone, what? Apparently,
Microsoft said the wow starts now.
Well, that's what I saw on a bus stop.
Yeah.
As a person was sitting there with their white iTunes lead hanging out waiting for the bus, I thought that was really quite ironic, really.
Obviously, this Windows Vista must be hot stuff and running out of the stores. I bet you can barely get a copy. I bet the shelves are empty.
It's funny you should mention that, Graeme.
Yeah?
I went to, over the course of the weekend, I was on the prowl for some white goods material, as you do, and I did a bit of a survey with some of the retail shops that I went past.
Oh, yes.
I went into several, and a couple of them fairly sizable retail. One I'll name is Officeworks.
Yep.
One which you would expect.
They've got a fairly sensible computer department.
They did. They had a really, really big display of Microsoft Vista there.
Yep.
And I thought, wow, they've got lots of copies here. Look at all that.
Mm.
No one was really paying too much attention to it.
Oh.
And I mentioned to one of the girls on the way, I said, so you sold much Vista? And she said, oh, that thing over there, no, I haven't sold one. I thought, oh, okay, good. I wonder if that's just an Officeworks-related thing. And I went into another retail chain and asked the same question. It was the Good Guys.
Yep.
And they had lovely, once again, nice big display of Vista on the wall over there. You know, all the big packaging, the funny, you know, cornered boxes and things. I said, so how's your Vista sales going? He said, oh, I haven't sold any.
Mm, oh. Interesting.
So it's just interesting. Just a straw poll with two retailers there. The Wow is certainly not...
Well,
grabbing the imagination.
I wonder if they know why too. Is it related to the fact you have to upgrade your machine, or is it the fact that it's Vista, you know, and it's new, and let's wait for it to mature?
Well, a combination
a bit
of that
we get it,
and a lot of things, I think, because Mac, anyone who's into the iTunes side of things has been told not to upgrade, as Justin said last week, to Vista for whatever reason. So I think there's a lot of things that are probably...
There'll be some resistance just because it's new, but there'll be a lot of...
Well, I don't know, XP walked out the door like there was no tomorrow, didn't it?
Well, yeah, but this is an interesting one in that all the things, the reasons that you would want Vista are all to do with the fancy new user interface, which is really nice.
You've used it, haven't you?
I have used it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you think the home user would pay all the extra money for Vista just to get the fancy graphics and that sort of thing, and knowing that they would then have to upgrade their computer most likely?
And that's the point, is that to get the advantages, to get to use the real advantages of Vista, you not only need to buy the full-blown expensive version rather than the cheap version, but you also almost certainly need to upgrade your computer to do it.
Maybe it's the supercomputer Ron was talking about in the opening of the show tonight on the news.
Well, maybe.
So it runs Windows there.
I think it might stand a chance of running Vista. That's a Freudian slip.
Windows Vista will catch on as people upgrade their computers, and their new computer will come with Vista, and it'll work great because it's a new computer and it's fast.
Yeah.
If you try to load Vista on your old machine, it's not going to run great because your computer's not brand new and isn't fast enough and hasn't got the fancy graphics card to do that.
And what's wrong with XP for those who are using... You know,
and that's
using
the
XP.
Other problem.
XP's rock solid.
And you can
XP is a... Windows XP Service Pack 2 was a brilliant operating system. It's absolutely fantastic.
And you can nearly
Why would you change?
Most of the fancies for XP that now come on Vista.
Can you?
Yeah. So they were... it was in an article recently that I saw and said, well, you want this fancy new pictures thing that looks after all, manages all your pictures and that, you can download a version for XP.
Yep. And like Windows Defender, I was saying before, that comes with Vista, you can download for XP as well.
So. I must add a funny little story that sort of I caught out of the corner of my eye, go past one of the news feeds during the corner of the week. Using Vista speech command for fun and profit. Now, if everyone remembers Macintosh had a thing, and a lot of people used to have a lot of fun with it, practical joke type sort of stuff, where you could talk to the computer and say, Windows shut down or Mac shut down and all sorts of things like that.
Yes.
And it would recognize your voice.
That's right.
Now, someone at Microsoft thought, hey, that's a good idea, and they've put it into the new version of Vista.
That's right.
Now, what some clever people are doing when you go to a website is actually play some audio file which comes out your sound card speakers. And you can actually tell Vista to actually log on to a specific website and download information. So it's a bit like a virus, an audio virus. Well, I thought it was very funny.
This was widely publicised in some of the tech media as being the first Windows Vista vulnerability that was discovered. But I thought that was a bit of a long bow to draw, because all you got to do is turn your speakers down and you're safe.
Exactly. Don't walk away and leave your sound card up, because someone will come in and turn your computer off or download malicious software on your system. I thought that was very funny. Anyway, that was the Vista challenge, I think, for Microsoft at the moment. They've got a bit ahead of them, and I think time will prove it. But at the moment, no one's in a great hurry to go beyond XP, I think.
That's true.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the downhill section of the program.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. all types of people listen to Tech Talk Radio.
And that means if you're on the move, in the car, in the train, or out of the office, you can't always get access to high-speed internet. That's why we've developed a new website custom-built for small devices. TTR.mobi is the new website for small-screen smartphones and PDAs. Get the latest Tech Talk Radio program information, access show archives, and find out what's on next week. Remember, for the latest Tech Talk updates when you're on the move, go to TTR.mobi.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Well, for this week's gadget, we've got a very Japanese take on a very English tradition. You know, the English pub tradition of the dartboard.
Oh, yes, throwing the old one, throwing the right-hander.
Yep. Now, what we've got here is an electronic dartboard, which I presume is just a little bit safer than throwing sharp objects.
So you throw something at your LCD screen, do you?
No. It's like a separate device. You hang it up on the wall. It looks like a real dartboard.
Throw it at your telly and duck.
Yep. It's got special darts. It's got a special surface on it, and the darts you throw at it stick to it, so there's no chance of them rebounding off and, you know, doing harm.
Sounds like a real dartboard.
Sounds like a real dartboard so far. Where it differs, it's got these leads coming out the bottom.
Oh, good.
Okay. And they plug straight into your big plasma screen telly or whatever it is you've got. And it does all, I presume, okay, it does all the scoring and all that for you.
Electronic dartboard. What will they think of?
Fully electronic dartboard.
How much?
$175 US, only available in Japan. It's 20,000 yen or some such
good
number. But yeah,
people would want to buy it.
But it'd be one of those gifts for someone who's got everything, or the pub that wants to go up market and stuff like that. Really,
yeah.
Very good. So that's the Tech Talk Radio gadget of the week: the electronic dartboard, available only in Japan, or probably
so
exported.
So far.
Yeah. Watch this space.
Watch the shelves down at JK.
Yeah, exactly.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
All right, as a web developer, one of the things that I'm always looking for is graphics, you know, photographs and things like that to use on my website.
Yep.
There is a great resource available to anyone who is that way inclined. If you're doing a website, even if you want to do press ads or graphics for the school flyer or whatever it is like that, and it's called Stock Exchange. And the URL, which is what you type into your browser, all the W's, .sxc.hu. I don't know where HU is, but nonetheless, it goes there.
Hungary or somewhere.
Could be. Stock Exchange. It's a three-letter abbreviation for Stock Exchange. SXC.
So this is like a play on words. What they mean is stock photography, and it's like a community where you can exchange your stock photography for free.
Exactly. People who want to be photographers tend to whack their, you know, photographs and things like that up online and give them free of charge for use in publications and things like that. Some high-res ones, some really good ones.
I've had a look. There's some fantastic photography there, really good stuff that you'd be proud to put on your website.
And there's even some photos that are sort of commercially available for very cheap rate, like a dollar.
Yep.
If you really find it, you know, professionally done photography, which is really good. So that's the Tech Talk Radio gadget, website of the week, Stock Exchange, sxh.hu.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
This week's Odd Spot is titled Give Your Ass a Royal Treatment. This could be a gadget, it could be a website as well. But
so we're not talking about donkeys here, you're talking about the back of your front, aren't you?
Yes,
you're talking about
toilet humour, right, yes. Toilet humour, turn off now if you're not interested in toilet humour.
The Kohler C3 series of toilets are capable of giving those Japanese brands a run for their money, featuring a special hydro-cleansing one that does away with toilet paper.
Oh, it's like a bidet or whatever they call them.
Yes, that's right, it's a toilet, dear. It's a bidet, it has an inline heater to splash your warm... water over your rear end, and along with the remote control.
Oh, good.
For the entire cleaning and drying process. For
I don't want to know why you need a remote control for your bidet.
This must be something in Japan too for the
deodorizing fan with adjustable speed.
I can do with a deodorizing fan.
And there's even a blue light for when you're stumbling around at night. You've got somewhere to aim and make sure you don't miss.
Well, we'll have to put it up on the website. That's the odd spot of the week. Thank you, everybody. It's been a pleasure. We'll be back same time, same channel next week. So till then, take care.
Tech Talk Radio is brought to you each and every week by a band of dedicated professionals from within the broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer and host Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Sir Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Production facilities are courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night from 8 p.m. The producers wish to thank all the stations that are taking the show, including 3WBC, 3XX, Cairns FM and 4KZ. For syndication, sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit the website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.